Well, good evening, everyone. I must say that we've just heard two very well crafted and expertly delivered talks that have relied upon the rhythm and the power of language, but I'm going to kill you with PowerPoint. And the reason for that is that I'm also going to take the opportunity to show you a few diagrams and pictures, which I hope will lighten things. I've called this talk Perspectives on the Future, and that's quite deliberate, the plural, because the future in the energy field is one that is subject to considerable uncertainty, and it's an uncertainty that can be found in a number of things that have gone in the past. And when I heard Andy just talk about 60 operational years, I've got to tell you that even as someone reporting what an academic research team has done over the last couple of years, even they dare not look 60 years into the future. So I think that tells us some of the challenge that we've got. I'd like to start with a very short little history lesson, and this relates to what we thought was going to happen to the energy system. And I'm going to mix up the world and the UK, and the reason for that is that those were the diagrams that I'd got, but they illustrate my point. So there's an element of poetic license in this. This comes from the International Energy Agency, and it's 4 years ago what they said the world would look like in 2050. And I don't wish to go through the details of all this, other than to say that there are four different scenarios there, or rather there's three scenarios plus a reference to the situation in the year 2005. And depending on the measures that you took, and those are the yellow, light blue and purple lines, you can imagine a future in which the energy consumption would come from a variety of sources. And I'll simply point out that on the left, the yellow bar of coal says if we don't do anything, there'll be a lot of coal. And alongside it, the purple bar says, but if we do all the things we think we should, there will be an awful lot less. Now, that was in 2008, and if you look at the purple bars, which represent the best-case scenario when all the emissions targets are met, you'll see that we're using some coal, quite a lot of oil, about as much gas, quite a bit of nuclear, quite a lot of biomass, and renewables are up there with everything. This, I should say, is the world fuel supply. I'm not just talking about electricity here. Now, if we then go to the following year, at last there was some real sense to go, because my own organisation published its view of the future, and it said, let's look at what the electricity will look like in the UK. And this graph has got two halves. On the left is 2035, and on the right is 2050. There's far too much information for us to look at in any great detail. So I will draw your eyes to the two bars on the right-hand side. And what they are is what we believe the electricity generation mix would be if we achieved an 80% reduction, that's second from the right, and the right-hand one is a 90% reduction in our carbon emissions. And you won't be able to read all the stuff, so the big, bright yellow bars there are the contribution of nuclear to our electricity generation, and the grey bars underneath it are CCS and coal, and the blue bars on the top are wind. So you can see that depending on the assumption that you make about decarbonisation, that has quite an impact, if you just let your eyes float over those five bars on the right-hand side, as to what you're doing. And what it does tell you, I'm going to go five to the right with the great big black bar in the middle. If you don't do anything, you're going to end up with a lot of coal in the system. So we now jump forward another year to the Royal Academy of Engineering, and it produced this rather nice graph that said, here's the electricity system in the UK, very simplified. Left-hand side is where everything comes from. Right-hand side is what you use it for. And what I'd like to point out there is an awful lot of the, I'm sorry, I said electricity, it's energy, an awful lot of the energy coming in is going through into the application of transport. That's all fossil fuel in the bottom left-hand corner. And there's a little bit of nuclear intermittent renewables up the top. But it's all fossil fuels powering transport and heating. And then if you look at what's going through the central box, which is the electricity system, you'll see that's got a much greater mix. What that tells us is that electricity is already even now, one of the most diverse sources of supply that we have in energy. Projecting to 2050, it said one of the possibilities of what the system might look like by 2050 is this. Two things to notice. A lot more goes through the electricity system because you're using electricity for transport, for various parts of heating. And the source of that, you will see, is substantially nuclear, CCS, and to a smaller degree, intermittent renewables and biomass. So that was by 2010. If we look at what the IEA thinks now, and this is the current scenario, again, we're going back now for energy overall, you can see that under different scenarios, it's now seeing a surprising amount of oil being used. I should point out this is 2035. Nuclear is actually reducing in its share of where the energy is coming from, and renewables are lower than everybody thought that they were going to be. So in that rather confusing scenario, we thought it would be a good idea if we updated our thoughts about where all this was going. And now you're going to have to concentrate a little bit, but I will try and pick out the cherries for you. We looked at a number of scenarios for 2050, and these are the main four ones. The top one that we call reference, we said, we do what we do now and we do nothing different until 2050. The second one is to say there might be one or two extra things that we think we might do without too much political pain. The third one is to say, no, we're going to hit the 80% carbon reduction target. And the fourth one is to say, but we're realists, so we're going to assume that from about 2 years' time, we're going to fail to hit those dramatic targets. In fact, we're going to undershoot by 30% for the remainder of that period. And there are a number of assumptions in there, and I'm not going to take all these through, but very broadly, what it says is that we continue to follow the current renewable energy directives and targets, that the electricity market reform, when it comes in, the new electricity bill, will have certain characteristics which will include some kind of floor for a carbon price. And then going to the more extreme things on the right, we're going to meet every single target that goes. We also assume, in our basis, that we've got a carbon capture and storage demonstrator plant, and that our additional measure says we've not just got one, we've got four. We've got possibly, in the future, some renewable heat incentives. We've maintained feed-in tariffs at least up to 2030. And we've made strides in household energy efficiency on the basis of the policies already announced. But going to the right, with the more aggressive things, we're doing even more stuff. And then there are various assumptions about industry and services, that there is a carbon reduction commitment, we've said, and that our targets for renewable transport are maintained. So that's more or less what we did. But we then decided that was far too simple, so we said, well, we'd better tweak it a bit, and let's see what happens if we discard the renewables obligation. We don't have a carbon price floor, that's the second case. Third case is we've got neither. And the fourth case is, not only do we have neither, but we abandon the carbon reduction commitments as well. One of the things that we like to do is paint a black picture of the future. So what does all that mean in terms of our scenarios? Well, this shows the four main things. The black line is if we just carry on doing what we're doing now. That is our carbon emissions from the UK's energy sector, not electricity. The red line is if we do a bit more, we'll follow that trajectory, and both of those have got the same characteristic. We go on a downward path, which is what we're doing now, but then we start to go up again. And then the blue line is we sort of almost get our carbon reduction, but not quite, and the green line is nirvana. That is the area that we are aiming for, where once we get there, we will live in a state of blissful non-existence. So this is the kind of thing that comes up out of those scenarios. This is where we get our energy for everything, not just electricity. And again, you won't be able to read the legend, so the bright yellow is now natural gas. We like to change the colours to make sure we're paying attention. The red that you see is oil. The black, of course, is coal. And the light blue is nuclear electricity. And you will see that under all those scenarios, there is fundamentally a very similar distribution of the energy source. The main difference is that the two carbon reductions ones say a lot less coal, a little bit more nuclear, and gas generally tends to diminish as we go into the future. So that's the baseline. If we now look at what the impact of some of those policy variations may be on the evolution, this graph on the left-hand side is now talking about electricity generation. We're getting down to the interesting bit now. Where's our electricity coming from? On the left-hand side of that left-hand graph is the year 2000 going up to 2050, and that's our baseline scenario. We do nothing. So if we just carry on, what's going to happen? Well, the light blue, the touching turquoise colour, is the growth in nuclear capacity. I should at this point say that all these figures are not guesses. They're done on an economic analysis of what the industry is likely to do given the conditions. It's the model that John Hayes spoke about before. This is our particular model through. So a lot of nuclear by 2050. The yellow colour is unmitigated gas, and you will see that that steadily decreases. The hatched bit at the bottom is coal with carbon capture and storage. The blue hatched bit at the top, diagonal, is wind. The vertical hatched bit that you see is marine. So what do we see there? We see that we're going to go to a future where we'll have reasonable amounts of carbon capture and storage, not maybe as much as you think, almost as much gas, unmitigated, a bit of biomass in the middle and biowaste, a lot of nuclear, and then the renewables at the top. The graph on the right-hand side tells you what happens if you assume some of those variants, and I'm not going to go through that in detail, but simply to say that the three different variants are shown at the bottom for the year 2020, then up for 2030 and 2050, and they show what impact each of those variants has on that distribution. But rather than go through that, I'd like to show you the picture that says, well, if we go through and assume now, not that we're not going to do anything, but we are going to meet our 80% carbon reduction targets, this is how the picture goes. And you will see that gas, the yellow, disappears almost to nothing. We've got that vertical hatch stuff down at the bottom, which is actually co-firing of biomass with carbon capture and storage. So this is a way of actually extracting carbon from the air. There's a bit of biowaste. The nuclear you see after the reduction in 2020 that the minister hinted at because of the current profile of likely build expands away, but it actually represents less. That may seem odd, but it represents less because the biomass is a better way of doing it. And then we've got at the top the renewables and all the other nice things. So what we see is that, strangely, those two graphs are not very different. There are differences, but they're not very different. So let's now have a little look at the tweaks that I spoke about. What happens if we decide to abandon some of these measures? And again, just so that you're paying attention, we've changed all the colours, but I will explain the ones that you need to look at. So we're looking here at where we're getting our electricity generation from in the year 2050, and on the left-hand side, that's the base case. That's we don't do anything differently. And then as we go up there, we've got the variance that I explained to you before. Second from the left, no renewables obligation. Third from the left, no carbon price floor. Fourth from the left, no renewables obligation or carbon price floor. And on the fifth, we've even abandoned the carbon reduction commitment. So on the left-hand side, the nuclear is purple. And what we see is that it can withstand the abandonment of the renewables obligation, but without a carbon price floor, according to our model, it disappears from the mix by 2050 altogether. If we look at the lower part, you will see that the blue rising up there is predominantly coal coming back in. There's quite a lot of oil, gas, which is the dark blue about halfway up, a little bit of biomass, and some renewables at the top. So what we see is that when you do the economic and the technical analysis, there's a very, very strong dependence on some form of positive support mechanism for all these things. But, however, the team that did this were not content with just doing that. They decided to vary some other bits and said, let's have a look at what happens if gas becomes surprisingly cheap and surprisingly available. And let's also look at what we do if we're going to meet the targets to make our system resilient by saying that nothing can be more than 40% of what we do. No technology, no fuel can be more than 40%. And, moreover, we continue to reduce the energy intensity of our economic activity, the GDP, by 3% a year. That's a very challenging target, but it's one way of meeting our ultimate 2050 targets. And what we see there is, starting from our reference cases and looking at that, the impact of low gas prices, as you might expect in the second from the right, is that you see a substantially increased share of gas in the market. But the purple bar, nuclear, that varies by less than 50% in its share of the market. But what you still see at the bottom is a lot of co-firing and CCS coming in. That's the brown bar. The point that I want to make with those figures, and I'll just emphasise with some more in a moment, is the fact that if you take those steps, again, other than the big increase in the choice of gas, there's not much difference in the rest of the structure of the system. If you apply those to a scenario where you've met your low-carbon ambitions, you've actually reduced by 80%, then the remarkable thing, looking at the same thing, on the left is, 80% reduction, then it's lots of gas. Third one in is lots of resilience, and the one on the right is lots of gas and everything you can do to make the system resilient. What's remarkable is very little changes. So it appears that the likely mix of electricity based upon what we know now is almost insensitive to that particular aspect of fuel supply. So I'm just going to show you what that does for the energy system overall. This is a nice little spider diagram, and round the edge you've got the source of energy. You've got renewable at the top, biomass, natural gas, oil, because this is energy now, coal, nuclear, for energy overall. And our reference case for 2050 says that's what the mix looks like. If we move on and say what happens if gas is very cheap, looking at the energy system overall, dramatic increase in natural gas. That's not being used for electricity generation, that's being used to heat your house. Nothing else changes very much. The variations are comparatively small. And then if you look at a resilient system, you put that blue bar on, and you'll see the overall effect of that is just to constrain the amount of fuel we use altogether. Then, this is now a low-carbon future. This is 80% reduction, absolutely achieved. Where do we think the world or the UK will be using its energy from? And you get a plot like that, and what you see is the one on the vertical axis going up to the top, renewables, there's quite a bit of that. On the 3 o'clock axis, there's quite a lot of natural gas. There's still quite a bit of coal, nuclear, and oil being used. With a lot of gas around, what you tend to do is even that out quite a lot. That's the green bar that I put there. And what it does is it actually smooths out the variations in the system, surprisingly enough. So in an 80% reduced future, with no constraint on gas supply, oddly, you're still using quite a lot of coal, quite a lot of oil, and not very much more as a percentage of everything natural gas. The thing is counterintuitive, actually, but it comes down to the relative costs of these things. And then if we look at a resilient future, we go back to that blue bar. Now, if you look at the sort of roughly 7 o'clock picture, which is nuclear, you'll see that under those scenarios, very few of them have much impact on the amount of nuclear you've got. So what we look at in these, and I've given you just here a few elements out of a vast amount of data, is to say that it appears that the real issue on all this is not in an unfinancially constrained world that we are going to be looking at vastly different mixes. What it says is that it's all as much dependent upon the financing of these things as it is upon the technology. And just to finish off with, I'd like to point out a very busy graph, and we're not going to go through this in order. These are what are called the welfare costs. Those of you that are economists will understand what that means. But you can broadly say, crudely, the hit on the economy. And this is measured in lots of money per year for all the different cases that I've described. And all that I want to point out with that is that if you look on the left-hand side at the big negative bars going down, those are mainly the cost of building a resilient, low-carbon system compared with the totally unconstrained system. Now, I make no judgments about that, and I would urge you, if you can see this graph, not to look at the numbers, because they can be very misleading. But what it does say is that there is clearly a cost in doing some of this, and if we were on the right-hand side, in a world where we were not constrained by some of the policies that we've properly taken to do, then there would be a difference. So there are big economic implications of a lot of that, is the point that I want to make. And then just finally, going back to the very latest utterances of the IEA, I want to make one final point on this. This is energy sources for the world in 2050. There are three bars which are different scenarios of what they're going to do about emissions. The point that I would like to make is, starting from the left, we've got coal, we've got oil, we've got gas, we've got nuclear, and we've got renewables. And I would just ask you to bear in mind the comparatively small share that renewables contribute to the overall energy system. And that's a technological issue. We have to find a way of meeting our ambitions using a number of those technologies that many people feel that perhaps we ought to avoid. And I would say that if you look at what the IEA is telling us, we are going to have to find a way of engineering a clean future in the way that we want it, using many of those resources that we are moving away from, and we shall continue to move away from. The message is it's going to take a long time. So, Andy, maybe your 60-year operating period is absolutely right. Thank you very much.